Hi guys, welcome. If you've not managed to grab a sandwich and some crisps yet, do get hold of those. And welcome to the second of three lunchtime talks that's being hosted by the Christian Union this week, where Nigel Binion is going to be addressing questions that are often asked of Christians and asked of the Bible. He's going to speak until about 20 to, and then there's going to be a time for questions until about 10 to. Yesterday, Nigel was looking at the question, in a world where truth is irrelevant, why pay attention to Jesus? And today, he's going to be speaking on the title, in a world where truth is relative, can everyone be right? Nigel.
Chris, thank you very much, and can I have my welcome? And good to see you back, or good to see you, whichever is the case for you. And hopefully today we can spend the whole of our time in this room. That'd be nice. Yesterday, you may not know, we had a rude interruption of a fire alarm halfway through, but we continued on the street outside, which wasn't ideal, but it was a laugh. Okay, let me start by telling you a story of three American baseball umpires having a chat in a bar. By the way, I know that sounds like the introduction to a joke, and it's not. I just want to tell you that because there's no punchline coming up, and I thought you'd be going to be really disappointed when it was really flat, okay? This is not a joke. It's just a story. Three umpires are talking, and one of them says, there are strikes and there are balls. That is American speak for good ball, bad ball, and that's what they've got to call. So he says, there are strikes and there are balls, and I call them the way they are. And the second one says, there are strikes and there are balls, and I call them the way I see them. And the third one says, there might be strikes, there might be balls, but they ain't nothing until I call them. And like I said, it's not a joke. See, no punchline, no one's laughing. There we are. But it does give us three attitudes to the question of truth. The first you could call, this is rather rough and ready, but the modernist. He says, there are strikes and there are balls. There is objective right and wrong out there. And it's true independent of you and me. And he believes he has a grasp on that truth. I call them the way they are. I can see right and wrong. I have have access to that absolute truth. But that view today is unpopular for a variety of reasons. Surely there is something in what the second umpire is saying. There are strikes and there are balls, and I call them the way I see them. Acknowledging that his sight isn't perfect, you know, sometimes he might get it wrong. There is objective truth out there, but the question of my access to it is a bit more up for grabs. And similarly, we have our own prejudices, our blind spots, our intellectual sight isn't perfect. And so the best we can say is that there may be some truth out there, but whether I can know it is another question. But the third umpire is increasingly dominant today, and that is the position of what I'm going to loosely call relativism. There are strikes, there may be strikes, there may be balls, but they ain't nothing until I call them. That is, there isn't really any objective truth, any absolute truth, true for everybody. What is true is really simply what I decide is true, what I, if you like, call into existence. And so truth becomes not a description of objective reality, but a description of my private opinion. It might be determined by your culture or your background, but at the end of the day, it's not public objective truth, it's private opinion. And while not universal, that is an increasingly dominant mindset today. And of course, that has a huge impact when we want to talk about God and religion and Jesus Christ and that kind of thing. So this has an enormous impact. Because for the relativist, talking about a religion or a worldview or something like that is not talking about an objective reality or comparing objective realities. They are just personal preferences. And therefore, they're not strictly true or false. They're not true or false descriptions of the way things are in the world. They're just what you prefer. So when you say, is Christianity true or is Islam true? It's not a valid question. It's just which do you like? It's like choosing ice cream, you know. Some people prefer chocolate ice cream, some people prefer vanilla. You don't say which one's true, which one's right. That's not a valid question anymore. There are a number of common illustrations of this, or ways it works out anyway, the most common is probably the many paths up a mountain. You heard that? You know, there's one mountain, lots of paths going up it, and the different paths represent different world religions or worldviews or whatever. And the point is, though, they all get to the top. So it doesn't matter which one you choose. You're all equally right, just go for the path you like. If you want a steep path, you want a narrow path, a wide, whatever. Your choice. Now, in your chair, you've got a piece of paper looking like that. Do you want to just grab it? These are some words of Jesus Christ recorded for us by the Apostle John. And we're going to look at some of them throughout this 20 minutes or so. Let's drop your eyes down towards the bottom, the last paragraph, sentence 6. Well, Thomas says, how do we know the way? Sentence 6. Jesus answered, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, he doesn't say I'm a truth, but the truth. And then he puts it in the negative, no one comes to the Father, to God, except through me. Jesus is saying he is the only way to God. Only if you come to him will you get to God. If you don't come to him, you don't get God. You get God's judgment. You get hell, he says. It's an absolute claim of objective truth that applies to everybody. Now, if you accept relativism, you couldn't get a more intolerant, terrible thing to say. Okay? What I want to do in the rest of our time is, having painted that little picture, is to examine relativism briefly and ask the question, are we happy with it? And then, in the second bit of our time, to say, why positively could Christianity make that kind of claim, or Jesus make that kind of claim, of being the absolute way and truth to God? So, first of all, relativism. I've got three worries about relativism. The first one is relativism is contradictory. Contradictory. There's no doubt that different religions make contradictory claims. So Christianity, Judaism, Islam say there is one God. Orthodox Buddhism says there's no God. Hinduism says there are millions of gods. But relativism says, there we are, you're all agreed. But in what sense are we agreed? Surely God exists or he doesn't. Surely God's existence or non-existence is independent of what I think. So how can it be that God does or doesn't exist? Christianity says that Jesus was divine, he was the Son of God, he died on a cross, and he rose from the dead. Islam says he wasn't divine, he was just a prophet. He didn't die on a cross, he went straight to heaven. Relativism says, there we are, you're saying the same thing. But how are we saying the same thing? We're making claims of history, of a real person in history. And surely Jesus died or didn't die, rose from the dead or didn't rise from the dead. These things cannot both be true at the same time. Now, the relativists might reply to that, well, those statements might seem to contradict each other, but actually they don't. The thing is, it's just that you can't see that they don't contradict each other. You've only got hold of part of the truth, and if only you could sort of see the whole picture, you would see that actually you're saying the same thing. Well, if the relativist says that, I think they've moved from being contradictory to, secondly, being condescending. You see, different religions are making claims that are truly contradictory. They say that God does or doesn't exist. Jesus did or did not die and rise from the dead. And those options are truly mutually exclusive. They cannot both be true at the same time. It doesn't matter how much more of the bigger picture you paint in, they cannot be true at the same time. And for the relativist to say, well, you just can't see that you're agreed, really isn't taking the claim of those world religions seriously. It's not allowing them to disagree. I think it's patronizing. That the Muslim, the Christian, mean to make mutually exclusive claims about public truth. And the relativist denies them that option and says you don't really mean that when you say it. We do mean it. And it's condescending to say otherwise. Let me put the same point in a slightly different way. Often in this debate, there is confusion, I think, between two things. Between the individual's right to believe something and the rightness of the thing they believe. Okay? We've got to be clear about which one we're talking about. Everyone has the right to believe what they want to believe. There's no doubt about that. Christians respect people's right to believe what they want to believe. It's just that just because they choose to believe something doesn't make it right. I mean, that is obvious to us, I think, in daily life. You know, you can believe that England beat Brazil in the World Cup quarterfinal if you want to. You have that right. You may long for that to be true. It was a painful day. But if you choose to believe that, you would be wrong. That doesn't accord with public objective history. The thing is, when it comes to questions of faith or religion and stuff, I think we sort of change the rules a bit here, and we suddenly say, you can believe different things about God and stuff, contradictory things, but actually you're all agreed, and you're not contradicting each other. But actually, the point is, the claims religions are making about God and Jesus and that kind of thing are in the same category as England and Brazil. We are talking about public, objective, historical reality. And so we can't change the rules and say, well, it's just an opinion. We're talking about things independent of us. There was a God, that there is a God who is real for us all, or there isn't. Jesus was on earth and died on a cross, or didn't. They're not matters of opinion. It's public objective reality. And to say, well, you're just all agreed, is either contradictory or, secondly, I think, condescending. Third reason, come back to me on any of this, please, at the end. Third worry about relativism, and that is that it's arrogant. Relativism claims to be, of course, very tolerant. And at first sight, it sounds very tolerant because any view is allowed. That's what it seems at first. But actually, I think it's very arrogant. Relativism says that every religion, worldview, or whatever, is culturally produced. It's our sort of self-creation. If that's right, you would think that relativism itself was culturally produced, a product of the 20th, 21st century. But the relativist replies, no, actually, that's not the case. Relativism is true. True, absolutely true, eternally true. For all people at all. It's quite a big claim, that, isn't it? To put it another way, just ask yourself, where is the relativist in the mountain scenario? Okay, you've got the mountain, you've got all the world religions going up their different paths, thinking they're doing different things. Where's the relativist? Well, he's in a helicopter. Because he's the one telling the story. And he's the one who says, I can look down on this mountain and see the whole of reality. And I can see that there's the Hindu, and there's the Christian, and there's the Muslim, and they think they're doing their own thing, but actually, I have perfect sight and can tell they're all doing the same thing, really. Now, that is a massive claim. Every world religion is stumbling around, half blind, in the dark a bit, but I can tell the truth. It might be right, it's just a massive claim, okay? And what it means in practice is that relativism only tolerates those who agree with it. If you say, I believe in Jesus and he can get me to God, but that's just true for me, relativism says, great, you know, excellent. Believe away. But if you say, I believe in Jesus and I believe he is the only way to God, not only for me but for everybody, he is absolutely true, the relativism suddenly says, no, you can't say that. That's out of court. That's a claim you're not allowed to make. You're not allowed to believe that. In other words, relativism only tolerates those who agree with it. When you think about it, it's not very tolerant, actually, is it? True tolerance, I think, is saying, I believe this, you believe something else, we disagree. I respect your right to believe what you believe. I don't think you're right, but I respect your right to believe it. And given that, we can now sit down and we can talk about it and discuss why we think different things and that kind of thing. That's true tolerance, I think. That's the sort of tolerance the Bible teaches, respect for people, and yet there is absolute truth. Okay, so there's three worries: contradictory, condescending, arrogant. But you may be sitting there all the time thinking, well, yeah, maybe. Maybe you're not thinking that. Maybe you're thinking, that's a load of rubbish. I've got some questions coming up. Help yourself in a minute. But Christianity makes some pretty objective claims as well, doesn't it? So how can that be the so? How can we claim that Jesus is the only way to God and absolutely true? Well, let me finish with that. Two reasons why Jesus makes that claim. First of all, only Jesus is divine, so only he can tell us the truth about God. Only Jesus is divine, so only he can tell us the truth about God. The Christian claim is that Jesus Christ is God come to earth. Now, we talked about this yesterday, and some of the evidence for that, and I'm not going to go through that again. But I just want to say that if that is true, if Jesus is God on earth, then what we're saying is the objective, absolutely true God who made this world and is therefore true for everybody has entered our world. And if that is true, that means that this man, Jesus Christ, who is God, the objective God come to earth, could tell us the truth, the absolute truth about God and life and us and our world. That is certainly what he claimed. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I can tell you the truth. Or going on in that sentence, verse 7, if you really knew me, you would know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. I am. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father, he's saying. I am God come to earth. I can tell you the truth. And that is where Jesus differs from other world religions. I mean, most of the religions I can think of, their founders are not divine. They're not God. So, you know, Islam, based on the writings of Muhammad, the claim, of course, is Muhammad received divine revelation from Allah. I'm not disputing that. So what he wrote, it is claimed as divine truth. But only Christianity will say its founder didn't just have a divine revelation, but was divine himself. Absolute truth come in person to our world. And that leads to a very important difference. That means you can investigate Christianity's claim. So if we're saying absolute truth, God himself has come into our world, into public, our public space and time, our history. So you can investigate him. When the Apostle Paul, one of the followers of Jesus, after Jesus had died, was preaching about Jesus, he got into trouble, he was on trial. And he, in his defense, speaks to the king who he's in front of, and he describes all that Jesus has done, his death and his resurrection. And then he says to the king, I am convinced that none of this has escaped your notice, because it was not done in a corner. And he means it wasn't done secretly. It wasn't a hidden thing. This is public. Everyone knows about this. Everyone's talking about this. And that means you can investigate it. The difficulty with something like Muhammad and the Quran, I think, is it's difficult to investigate the claim that it's absolutely true. You can read the Quran, which it said is divine truth. It's largely teachings. There are some stories, but it's not... There's not really a connection with our world. It didn't happen in our history. It is direct revelation. So there's no witnesses to corroborate it. There's no external sources to comment or anything like that. But with Jesus, you can investigate him. He is a public revelation of God in our world. And if you're serious about finding the truth, I think there's nothing better you could do than to investigate Jesus Christ. We've got another talk tomorrow. We've got talks Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening. There's this Witness Cafe. Be a brilliant way to to investigate Jesus Christ. There's some Gospels at the back. I was going to say this yesterday, but we weren't in this room anymore when we got to that point in the talk. So I said, there are some Gospels back in the room, if you want to go back. At the back, there are some John's Gospels. It'd be fantastic to read about the person of Jesus Christ. Really, it is so critical. This is what it comes down to. Who is he? Who is, if he's a man, forget him. But if he's God, that changes everything, because he can tell us the truth. So you've got to work out who he is. There's nothing more important than doing that. I'd encourage you to go to that, get a gospel, and look. He can tell us the truth if he's God, about himself, God, about us, our world, what we're doing here, what's after death, everything. It's a huge thing. Who is Jesus Christ? He says, I'm God, I can tell you the truth. Second reason why Jesus can make this claim, being the only way to God, only he can tell us the truth because he's God. Secondly, only Jesus has died for us. So only he can give us a place with God. I know this is a bit of a generalization, but I think it's fair to say nearly all world religions basically offer you some kind of... they say there's some kind of problem in the world, and they offer a kind of solution to it. Some way of reaching the divine or paradise or of some sort, whether it's acceptance by Allah or being reabsorbed into Brahman or reaching Nirvana or whatever it is. There's some kind of goal on offer. And the way you get there is basically by doing something, adhering to some sort of rules or conduct or practice. Whether it's the five pillars of Islam or doing your duty to improve your karma or keeping the Jewish law or whatever it is, you do something to get to that goal. And you get to that goal because of your effort. Now, I know that's crude and I apologize for it, but I think it's broadly a fair comment. But in this, Christianity stands unique and quite different in its analysis of the problem and in its solution. Because Christianity says it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter what you do, you'll never make it. God is perfect and holy, and we have rebelled against him, and we face his judgment. And it doesn't matter what you do, you cannot be good enough for him. Give up. You cannot earn your way to God. It doesn't matter how many times you go to church, or be good, or give money, or whatever. You cannot earn your way to God. But Jesus says, I am the way. I am the way to God. Or in verse 2, he says, the top of the page, in my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. I'm going to prepare a place for you in heaven, he's saying. You don't deserve a place, but I will prepare a place for you. And he does that by dying for us. Jesus' death is really the heart of Christianity. We haven't got time to talk about it now, because our time is nearly gone. Friday night, you've got a talk on Jesus' death. It would be fantastic to go to, because this is if you want to understand Christianity, you've got to understand Jesus' death. Briefly put, we face God's judgment. Jesus, in his death, takes God's judgment for us. So we don't have to face it. We can be forgiven. We can have a place with God. He prepares a place for us with God through his death. And that means what Jesus offers to us is not a set of rules or do this, but rather says, I offer you a place with God. Free. It's a gift. Just have to accept it. It'll have all sorts of implications for your life, certainly, but... You don't earn it. You don't work for it. You're just given it. So if the message of all religions, I think, is basically do this, and you will get, if you do enough, you'll get to God or whatever. The message of Christianity is done. Jesus has done this for you, and you just receive it. That is why Jesus claims to be the only way to God, because only he has dealt with this problem of us, of what we've done wrong and God's judgment in his death. Only he's done that. I've got to say, you know, this makes Christianity quite unique, quite distinct from other religions in its solution, and it is wonderful. It's wonderful because when you're told earn it, you can't. Well, we can't do it. It's too hard. It's wonderful that Jesus is offering us forgiveness and a free place with God. Lots of implications for our lives, yes, but a free place with God. It's a wonderful thing. What that means in practice, actually, is that when Christians say, I believe only we are going to God, only we are saved, they don't mean they think they're better than anybody else. You can say, that just sounds very arrogant, only I'm saved, only we're saved. The reason they're saying that is not because they think they're better, but because they've realised they're not. They've realised they're bad, and they can't earn their way to God's. But Jesus offers them a place. That's what's going on there. They're saying, I have realised I can't make it, but Jesus has died for me. And because of him and what he's done, I can have a place with God. Now, I've stated those two things very quickly, and they're massive, and I just encourage you to look into them more and more. Why can Jesus claim to be the truth? Absolutely true. Because he is divine, the truth come to earth. We can know the truth. Only he has died, so we can have a place with God. That is why Jesus claims, and Christians believe, he's the absolute truth and only way to God. That is true for everybody. Listen, I've got to stop. Let me just finish by encouraging you again to this Witness Cafe. I think that would be a great thing to go to examine these things and ask questions and all that sort of thing. And I'd really encourage you to it. But we do have 10 minutes now for questions. I'm going to hand back over to Chris just for a second.
Guys, there will be a chance in just a second to ask any questions to Nigel, so do be thinking if there's anything that you'd like to come back on from the talk. In the meantime, if anybody has lectures that are a long way away from here and you won't have time if we finish at 10 to go to them, then please do take this opportunity to leave now if you would like. And while some people are doing that, it's a chance to pick up this little card that everybody should have on your seat, and you should have a pencil as well. The purpose of the card is for you to be able freely to give any feedback, any comments, any thoughts that you have about the talk and the things that have been said. And there'll be a box as you leave for you to put these cards in. If you'd like to, you can leave your name. Please don't feel that you have to. But any comments that you do give will be very much appreciated. Just let me say very briefly what's going on for the rest of the week. Tomorrow, in the same place, at the same time, Nigel will be speaking on the subject, in a world where truth is hiding, where can I find God? But then from Thursday through Saturday, the talks won't be here. They'll be in the evenings, and they'll be in St. Andrew the Great Church Building, which is just opposite the main entrance to Christ's College. So now we've about 10 minutes for questions, and we'll break at 10.
You remind me at 10:00? Yes, that's 10:00. Great, we've got a bit of time for questions. Say it again.
The relativist guy in helicopter.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the UN helicopter tries to start thinking about 2 weeks
ago. Do you know, what are you saying? You're saying that... that's the point of relativism, you mean? Okay. Yeah, people do worry about, if you make absolute claims to truth, then that makes us very intolerant of each other, and it starts wars and that kind of stuff. That's often an accusation thrown at that sort of claim. I don't think it needs to do that, because the Christian faith would teach that God has made us, you know, in his image, and we should respect each other and that kind of thing. And that's why I mentioned the individual's right to believe what they want to believe. And therefore one can make a claim to absolute truth without saying that is something that needs to be forced onto people and they should be made to believe it, or if they don't, you know, go to war or whatever. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Yeah.
To use your example, if you've been told that England would beat Brazil, I'm Evan around Jesus said the aptitude for ministry in Brazil, including your parents, and no endeavor to follow the truth. Should you be punished for being wrong?
Thank you. Let me repeat the question for people at the back. In my example of Brazil and England, a painful one for some of us, if you grew up being told England did beat Brazil, which they didn't, just in case you didn't know that, just want to be clear, not football exclusive or whatever. If you grew up being told England did beat Brazil, everyone believed that around you, etc., etc., should you be punished for believing that? So basically, you know, we inherit our religion from our culture and that kind of thing. You've never heard anything else. Is that, yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. There's a couple of things I'd say in reply, I think. One is that the Bible does claim that God's existence is clear to everybody apart from what you've ever heard. So let me just read a quick verse from the book of Romans. Chapter 1, this is the Apostle Paul speaking, saying, the wrath of God has been revealed against people. God is angry with people and will judge them because what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. So one answer is that even, it doesn't matter where you're born, what culture you're in, or what religion you're taught, God's existence is clear to you, and yet actually we all respond by rejecting him. And we are therefore guilty, and we deserve his judgment. That is people being guilty for rejecting God, not for rejecting Jesus that they've never heard about. Okay? Some people then reply and say, but what if they never hear about Jesus and the offer of salvation? Is it fair for God still to punish them? And it's a tricky question because the Bible doesn't address, I don't think it addresses it explicitly, but the weight of the Bible is you do need to hear about Jesus to be saved. And that is what's motivated Christians, to be honest, to put on events like this and go around the world and tell people about Jesus. If God was to punish someone who had never heard about Jesus, it wouldn't be unfair. In fact, it would be fair. That's exactly what it would be. Because God would be giving them, in the Bible's eyes, a right punishment for their rejection of him. So even to hear about an offer of salvation, in a sense, is good of God. If he was just to be fair, he would just judge us. So we are privileged to have the Bible in the language we understand, and I hesitate to say you're privileged to listen to me speak. I never would, you know. But you get the idea. We are privileged to hear about, or have the opportunity to hear about, the offer of salvation. And if we reject that, then... yeah. Yeah, let me repeat the question again. We are privileged. Thank you for your nice comments about eloquency, whatever. It's very kind. But the guy in the Amazon doesn't have that privilege. That isn't fair. Well, I don't know if I can answer much more than I've just said, really. I think for God to judge somebody who has rejected him and lived their life without reference to him is exactly that. It is fair. And God doesn't owe them the opportunity to be saved. It is perfectly just of him to judge somebody. Quite why God has arranged things, so say, in this country at the moment, one hears, you know, more. There's the opportunity to hear about Jesus where in other countries there may not be. I don't know. I can't answer that. But I don't think it's unfair of God.
Thank you.
Sure. You're saying that if you told half the people, you know, if you go left, you'll be saved. If you go right, last answer. Chris is moving towards me. If you go left, you'll be saved. If you go right, you're not. But other people don't know that. That certainly, that would be unfair. That's right. But that's the wrong... I think that misses the starting point. The starting point is that we are all guilty and deserve to be judged. So it's much more... let me put it, this is rather simplistic, but let's say you were all in debt to me. Some chance, but there we are. You're probably all in debt to somebody else, actually, aren't you, because you're students, but there we are. You're all in debt. If I chose to give somebody here, say, you're not in debt to me anymore, and I'm going to give you £1,000, say, I chose to give this chap here, that's what I'm not, by the way, let me be clear about that before anybody sort of writes that down. If I did that, would I be, and then I said, I'm afraid you owe me my debts, and if you don't pay, you're going to prison. Am I being unfair to this lady? Well, I'm not actually. I'm actually being completely just, aren't I? Only in the sight of my goodness to somebody else, sometimes we react and go, that's not fair. But it is fair. The point is, the starting point is not a neutral one. The starting point is we all face God's judgment. I'm not sure I've satisfied your answer, but I must stop because our time's up. Thank you very much for listening, and look forward to seeing you tomorrow if you can come.
Thanks very much, Nigel. I'm sure there are a lot of questions that haven't been answered. If you do have questions that you're still wanting to think through, do take one of these home, Witness Cafe. Do consider coming along to it. And also, Nigel will be hanging around afterwards. If anyone wants to chat to him personally, that's another opportunity to continue asking questions. Do pop the response cards in the box as you leave. And thank you very much for coming.